Tell to all my friends that all of my issues, it's a me, Mario. Woohoo! Mamma mia! You guys, you're number one. Woohoo! Are you number one? Ho ho! Wait a second, bro. Here we go. Woohoo!
Hello, Internet, and welcome to another episode of All My Issues. In this episode, episode 23, we have a special Valentine's Day episode. We all have those people that we love and care about in our lives. And this episode is going to focus on love. And what we're talking about as far as love goes is fictional romances. So this episode is going to be all about the top fictional romances. But before we get into that, let's talk about Geek Fuel. If you're anything like us, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are, you're into geeky things. And the best way to get your monthly geek on is to subscribe to Geek Fuel. With Geek Fuel, each month, you get a new box filled with fun, geeky things from movies, sci-fi, pop culture related material. And right now, if you go to our website, allofmyissues.com, and click on the Geek Fuel link, you can save $3 off of your Geek Fuel subscription. Use those $3 to buy your sweetheart something special. All right, let's get started. My name is Rick.
This is Sam.
I'm Chris.
All right, and today, this is a very, very special Valentine's Day episode.
Ooh,
that's
love.
Right.
Love is in the air.
It's the episode for the ladies. So, yeah, what we're going to talk about today is our picks for our top five best fictional romances.
It's kind of a geek spin.
That's a geek spin. There you go. So, you know, ones you can, you know, talk with your girlfriend about and, you know, maybe come to some mutual understanding of, you know, how romantic it really is. I don't know. This is our, you know, we might be completely biased on these picks. These probably aren't really anything that women would find romantic whatsoever for the most part, but, yeah.
Yes, so. They would.
Yeah,
well, yeah, they would.
Yeah.
100%.
100%.
I think so.
Yeah.
60% of the time it works 60. Every time.
There you go. So, I guess without further ado, I guess we'll get started.
Further deuce.
We haven't even gotten there.
I know.
It's already happening.
So, starting out on my list, number five. I'm going with Stan and Francine Smith from American Dad.
That's a good one.
And now the reason why I picked them is because, you know, those two, no matter what, always find a way to stick together. American Dad first came on the air on May 1st of 2005. And, you know, by Seth MacFarlane, of course. And out of all of Seth MacFarlane's characters, you know, the Griffins and the Browns, I just thought the Smiths were the kind of the better couple. Because the Browns, you know, Cleveland and Loretta, they got divorced. And then Cleveland married Donna.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And so I kind of figured, you know, they weren't really married too long, so they couldn't really make my list. And then for, you know, Peter and Lois, at times they seem like they just tolerate each other because, you know, Peter just does something really, really stupid and Lois is just like, it's Peter, okay. So, you know, it's kind of, so I thought Stan and Francine.
They have that bondage thing going for them.
They kind of do.
So there's probably something a little more going on there that we don't even know about.
Safe word's banana.
The safe word's banana. sometimes, you know, people like to cross dress and stuff and wear the same dress. I mean, but I think a happy medium between the two is Stan and Francine Smith of American Dad. You know, Stan acts like the, you know, the alpha male at times and very conservative, and Francine is, you know, basically the a trophy wife, but you know they have two children, and
an alien and a goldfish,
and an alien and a talking goldfish that has a German brain. So yes, yeah,
the fish is the best.
Yeah. And so
I love the alien with the Paul Lynde voice. Yeah. Roger is amazing.
Roger is pretty amazing.
So yeah, so they have that all going on, you know, with all that going on, and Stan works for the CIA. So there's a lot of things that go on in the CIA that, you know, a lot of secrets and everything, and you need a woman that has your back, and Francine has his back. There's several episodes where, you know, Francine had to keep a secret because, you know, the CIA is gonna would come and you know, kill Stan if, you know, if that got out. There's those scenes, and you know, Stan also, as much as sometimes he could be stubborn, but when it comes down to Francine, he will ultimately do it. There's an episode where they go back in time, and Stan finds out that before they got married, Francine slept with a guy, so with this random guy. And they wasn't quite sure whether or not that was their daughter's biological dad or not, or if Stan was. So, you know, Stan had to, you know, go back in time and had to possibly hook his wife up with the guy in order for their daughter Haley to possibly exist, if Haley is his real daughter or not. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, that's a kind of a test there when you have to get your wife laid.
That's an admirable thing to do.
I do that on a weekly basis. I don't think it's that admirable. My wife had a similar reaction when she found out I too had slept with the random guy before we got.
So,
in fact, I'm not 100% sure that my firstborn is hers.
And who knows? But my number five is Stan and Francine Smith from American Dad.
That's a good pick. Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's okay. That works.
Just as a little side note, I know their picks, so I was making sure that we didn't repeat, but they don't know mine yet.
Yeah, so we're all kind of excited.
Yeah.
So, and only because I was the last person to work on the list is the only reason, and I decided last moment since I didn't have any doubles. So I'm getting my obvious choice out of the way at number five in terms of geek culture. Romance couples, power couples, if you will. Going Lois Lane and Clark Kent.
Oh, this is, yep. That's.
Since 1938, in every form of medium, there is one constant, and that is their relationship. I will say that Superman might have led her along a little bit, because, you know, having met her in 1938 to not propose until 1990.
Come on.
But the idea is that at least at first it was kind of set up like a love triangle. Clark loved Lois. Lois loved Superman.
She ignored Clark. This is true.
But she fell in love with Clark Kent eventually.
I see.
And in so doing so, got the Superman. So what teenage fantasy is that playing up to for all those geeky young men out there that you can,
is true.
You know, that's just
true. Yeah.
So they eventually got married in 1996, And then I'm sure that's been retconned a thousand times since then.
Yeah, that's probably... Was it 96? Was it that late? I thought it was...
Well, he died in there in between.
Oh, that's right.
So they had the reign of the Superman, which we won't talk about. It really wasn't... It was pretty bad, but... Yeah.
But there was even that Lois and Clark TV show.
Lois and Clark TV show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed
even eventually one. Smallville had to bring Lois in.
Oh, that's right. They did. Yeah, they did.
Was there Erica Durant? I forget.
So you guys don't remember my name? What?
Come on. It's been a while since I watched Smallville.
That's right.
That's my number five pick.
I like it. That's a good pick. It's a classic.
Well,
it is a classic.
Well, maybe because the reason why he waited so long, he kept doing that super kiss and she kept forgetting it.
That's right. All right. Well, I guess that brings us to my number five, and I'm going to do kind of the same thing that Chris did, kind of get rid of maybe the more obvious one out of the way first, and my obvious one is Peter Parker and Mary Jane.
Okay.
Yeah, I've always...
You're talking about Mary Jane Watson. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah,
Mary Jane.
We all love Mary Jane. I mean, but as far as characters go, Spider-Man has been a favorite of mine for a long time, and I think of, you know, I know a lot of people like Gwen Stacy as being his romantic counterpart, but no, I've always been a Mary Jane fan. Yeah, exactly. So there's been just, you know, so many issues. I can't even like think of one specific one that I think is like the quintessential Mary Jane Peter Parker moment in a comic book.
My quintessential, yeah, face a tiger, you just hit the jackpot.
There you go.
Boom.
Yep, there you go. What issue is that from, do you know? Amazing Spider-Man.
Klaatu.
But yes, that's you're right. You're absolutely right, though. That's
my quintessential.
Like, yeah, quintessential moment for sure.
Though I bet some people might have the cinematic hanging upside down kiss in the rain.
That's true too.
They might have Nickelback and saliva singing to each other from buildings.
Yeah. I mean, few things become more romantic than, you know, once you add Nickelback to it. Oh, man, there you go. That's like...
It's panty droppings everywhere.
Oh, man. That's like magic. Just poof. I don't know. That's something else. Oh, can I have my Nickelback?
Speaking of that, I think they're coming out with a new album.
Oh, man. There you go. Let's hope it's not included in the new Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, let's hope not.
Let's hope not.
We don't really hate you that much, Nickelback. Well, maybe we do.
All right. Number four. I'm going to go into the 90s here. Number four is Justice and Firestar from the New Warriors. Now, you're probably wondering, who is Justice? Those of you who have been reading comics in the 80s, Justice was known as Marvel Boy.
From the New Warriors.
Yeah. So when he became an Avenger, he changed his name to Justice. So here's a little background. Justice, his real name was Vince Astrovic, a.k.a. Marvel Boy. His first appearance was Giant Size Defenders, issue number 5. That was in 1975. Firestar, her first appearance actually... her real name is Angelica Jones. And her first appearance was actually on the television show Spider-Man and these Amazing Friends.
That's right, we all love
Drake.
It. Yeah. Yes, Bobby Drake.
Bobby Drake in 1981.
Yeah, it's amazing that sorry, Sam.
No, that was her first.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, it, those characters, like, it seems like that's something that should have just been in the comic book from the beginning, I think. Just, you know, Firestar, she's a mutant. Iceman, she's a mutant. Fire and Ice. I mean, it just seems so natural to have those two characters in a title together and, you know.
And teaming up with Spider-Man. And actually, Firestar's first actual comic book appearance is Uncanny X-Men issue 193. And that was in May of 1985.
Okay. That issue.
So, gee, really?
I think that's a giant-sized issue with Magneto on the cover.
She's actually on the cover.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's on the cover, and they're fighting. I'm trying to remember who they're fighting, because I remember looking at the cover. Are they fighting the Hellions? I think they're fighting the Hellions from the Hellfire Club. I could be wrong.
Oh. Yeah, this is not the issue I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of 200, probably. That was probably the giant size one.
Yeah. Some little known facts about both.
I do have this one.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, a little known fact. Did you know Marvel Boy is a mutant?
Yeah, because he's like a
telekinesis, right? Yeah. He has telekinesis powers, and Firestar, she can microwave. Well, fire and microwave things. So she set things on fire. She's a pyro. Set things on fire. Use microwave waves. Burn everything. I didn't know that. I didn't know he was immune. I just thought
she made my wiener warm. I might have crossed the line there. What is a double sized issue? I just had the.
It is it. Oh, there you go. The but also he Marvel Boy becomes. Well, in the Guardians of the Galaxy, like in that future version of it too, he was Vance Astro, I believe. Wasn't he? Isn't there some? I believe there, it was, right.
That's a different. I think that's a different guy.
Isn't there some connection between those two though?
I don't know. We need.
Might be just pulling that out
because you're thinking of a guy. You are thinking of a guy from the Guardians of the Galaxy. Isn't he like blue with stars or something like that?
Yeah, he's kind of because his name's Astrovik, right?
Yeah,
Vance Astrovik.
Vance Astrovik. That's an amazing name.
Yeah, yes, and Vance Astrovik. Yeah, because he gets sent into space because he has that crazy. They are the same guy. Yeah, but it's a different timeline, an alternate timeline counterpart.
Oh, okay.
So I knew there was some weird connection there. Yeah, but like, I think in that alternate timeline version of him, where he's sent into space, he develops his mutant abilities later.
Okay.
But yeah, he's encased in that alternate timeline as Vance Astrovik. He's encased in a suit that's like kind of like a skin tight suit that covers like his entire body.
Oh, kind of a Captain Atom thing.
Kind of like that, yeah, but it's supposed to preserve him as they send him through space to go to uncharted areas in space, and then when he got knocked off course, I believe, or something like that, so once he finally landed someplace and he awoken from his cryo sleep,
he discovered the Statue of Liberty on a beach.
But no, he actually found out that human civilization had already populated and basically have made it there before he did. So like thousands of years later or whatever, I think, because I think Guardians of the Galaxy is supposed to take place in at least that incarnation of Guardians of the Galaxy took place in the year 3000, I think.
All right.
I believe. I'm just trying to pull this all from memory.
Because there's a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy, and you're like, which one?
Yeah, because it's,
Yeah, it's all over the place.
It is. So.
A little story on their relationship. They first met each other basically on issue one of the New Warriors. And, you know, they were teammates for a while, and then they started to have feelings for each other. And began a romance. And that romance lasted through a lot of difficult times. One where Vince was sent to jail for involuntary manslaughter of his abusive dad.
Mm.
And so that was kind of hard on Firestar, but, you know, they got through it. And, you know, when he got out of prison and everything, that's when he changed his name from Marvel Boy to Justice. And so they were together through that, and then they both joined the Avengers, because if you remember, Marvel Boy always kept trying to be an Avenger, and, you know, Captain America, when he would fail, Captain America, you know, it's like, hey kid, you gotta keep trying, and you can't be an Avenger. So finally, they both became Avengers, and they've been together for a long time. They were engaged, but end up breaking up, and so right now, they're kind of separate. So, but they still care for each other, and, you know, reading, I was a New Warriors fan, so I read it and stuff, so that was always, you know, those two were the couple, so, on that team, so.
Yeah.
So, number four, Justice, slash, aka Marvel Boy, and Firestar.
Yeah, they're just, I guess, just to add one last thing to that Vance Astro thing, too, is that, like, in that future alternate version of him, he also had the Captain America shield, so. Yeah, because of... I forget exactly how he got a hold of it. There's some convoluted story, I think, that involved him getting the shield. But I just thought, since you mentioned the other connection with Captain America, might as well just include that as well. Just
nice.
I'm staring at a picture of him on my phone right now. That sounded completely wrong. This is the romantic episode, though, yes. I guess, so, you know.
Right now, nothing's, just romantically staring at a picture on the
phone. Nothing's off the table.
Well, never mind. Yeah, no. All right, my number four is from a 2009 movie. And really, it's only 10 minutes of that movie. The first 10 minutes. And I'm talking about the romance between Ellie and Carl in the movie Up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And that might be the perfect 10 minutes with hardly any dialogue, with nothing. You learn so much, and it influences the entire rest of the movie. You see the childish love that builds from friendship, of him being very straight-laced and everything, and her being far more adventurous. And they build a life together. They build the house together. They build a nursery together, and then they can't have children. There's just a constant yearning to explore, but life kind of gets in the way. And then, she gets sick right as he's got her tickets for their own adventure off in, I forget what country.
Yeah, I forget.
So by the end of that 10 minutes, I was ready to tie balloons to my house and fly away.
Exactly.
It was just perfectly done and just very touching. And
that is like a 10-minute emotional roller coaster.
Yeah. My wife's kind of making fun of me because the older I get, the harder it is for me not to tear up sometimes. That's one part where it's hard for me not to.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. That is a really good pick, because I have to admit, when I watched that, there were tears.
Yeah.
There were tears. I'm like,
we are men enough.
That's right.
We're... The end of Toy Story 3 gets me.
I
don't know why. I do know why, because I miss my effing toys.
I know, come on.
What happened to my toys?
She really made fun of me because Arrival got me.
But that Arrival was pretty...
And
man,
she was almost unfazed.
That's crazy to me.
She has some choice words about me.
Yeah. Like, woman, you have no soul.
But the kid got the... That Arrival was... Man, that was another one that got me, too. I
realize my wife might be heartless. This might be the worst Valentine's Day podcast ever.
Oh, man.
So that's my number four.
That's your number four.
Yes. All right. I think the next one I'm going to get
my,
this one.
My goal, by the way, is for everyone that I say, is for both of you to go, Oh!
Well, it's going to be that
right now. I'm two for two.
That's, I'm telling you. I'm going to.
Deuce for deuce.
Deuce for deuce.
Sounds like the worst contest ever. Yeah, yeah. I challenge you.
I challenge you.
I will fight you deuce for deuce.
Or law firm. This is deuce and deuce.
Deuce and deuce. Attorneys at law. All right. Well, I'm gonna introduce one, and I don't know if this is. I mean, I think there's definitely a romantic element to this, but also this might be a little bit of a downer towards the end, at least as far as like people might know this character. The relationship I'm talking about is John Constantine and Kit Ryan. John Constantine has had several romantic partners over the years, and. In his comic book history. Kit Ryan is probably my favorite, my personal favorite, because it's the one that seemed like he had like the most strong relationship to, at least as far as I'm concerned, it seemed like that way. I don't know. Part of it's probably Garth Ennis writing a very captivating story. John Constantine being the person that kind of walks in the darkness and in the shadows and messes with the black magic and everything else. Kit was kind of the opposite of that. She was aware of magic, but was also aware of the potential hazards and repercussions of dealing with the mystical arts, if you will. So it was something that she made a decision early on to not involve that in her life. So she kind of had made a deal with John Constantine to make sure that, you know, she's okay with him still, you know, delving into that world, but she didn't want it to be brought into her life. So she basically said, hey, we can live together and everything, but don't bring any of it home.
Got it.
So, and they had a long...
Like NBA players.
Yeah, kind of like that. Don't bring it home. Don't bring it home.
Don't bring it home.
So there, you know, that relationship lasted for quite a while. I think quite a few issues. Like, I want to say 30, 40 issues, maybe. I might be shooting pretty big number there, but it seemed like that anyways. It seemed to last for a while, but eventually it kind of came to a conclusion where somebody that John Constantine got involved with actually ended up being some white supremacists, I believe, that he angered, that came back to his apartment looking for him, found Kit. Kit was able to fight them off and run and escape, but... that pretty much ended the relationship with John. That sent John constantly down into a drunken stupor where he was pretty self-destructive, and that lasted for a little while too before he pulled himself out of that. But yeah, it was a pretty interesting time for John Constantine because he was pretty low at that point in time. But
that's why people with power should probably try to avoid keeping white supremacists nearby.
That's If anyone's listening, I'm talking about
Constantine for crying out loud.
I mean, right?
Stop trying to take my words out of context.
No, I couldn't agree more. John Constantine should not mess with white supremacists.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So. He should deny, if there's any connection that they try to establish, he should deny it immediately.
There you go. Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, John Constantine... Kit Ryan, a little bit of a downer, I guess, because it ends horribly, but it was nice while it lasted, though. So
I don't know that I can't remember. That sounds familiar to me, but I probably read it, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it happened. The storyline. I think it kind of happened a little bit. I'm trying to think of the time frame as far as where Dangerous Habits took place.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think I might have read that, and does it have the white supremacists has more? Don't they hate the Pakistanis in England more so?
Yes, I
remember.
Yeah, there's something like that where that's involved. Because
I remember roughly, but I don't remember.
Yeah,
everything.
Yeah,
I think I have the whole Garth Ennis run in graphic novel form, or at least whatever they could find.
I've been wanting to go back and just kind of researching this again, because kind of after it popped in my head, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go back and just kind of look into the storyline. I was like, oh man, I really got to go back and read these books.
The problem I have with the Hellblazers is that the graphic novels aren't like this is issue 1 through 10 in volume 1. It's just like they were just released series, and you have to
figure out where they go.
And they might skip an issue here or there.
Exactly. That's kind of... And that was the one thing, too, that I guess with Kit Ryan, too, there were actually some one-off issues that just had her and her family in it, that, and how she dealt with John Constantine after the fact as well.
So you got to know her.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Oh, that's good.
Well,
at least she didn't die.
No, she didn't die.
Yeah,
that's
good.
So,
that's what I look for in a woman.
Yeah,
she didn't die.
Not dead.
Not dead.
All right, number 3.
Number 3
on our list of love.
The love list.
The love list. Time to geek out. Number 3 for me, we're going to go to another kind of teenage superhero group, because I think that's where, like, love has its most strongest and yet most destructive.
I think Sam's trying to tell us something here.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm trying to tell you a certain age man talking about teenage love a lot.
Because we all were teenagers and once and hormones and everything.
Do you have to tell your neighbors when you move in? No. Just double checking.
Just making sure.
If the house is a rocking, don't come a knocking.
There. Whoa.
Boom. Number 3 is Beast Boy and Raven. From the Teen Titans, as my number 3 couple. Let's see, we're going to start with Beast Boy. His real name is Garfield Logan. His first appearance, Garfield Logan.
I have to admit, I did not know what Beast Boy's real name
is. I only knew it because I looked it up once. All I could picture is like the cat, Garfield the cat, with like Wolverine claws.
Because the most part, I didn't know it was actually Garfield. I knew it was Gar, and they like always called him Gar, but I didn't know it was actually Garfield. So I was like, you turn into any animal, your name's Garfield. Hilarious. His first appearance is on Doom Patrol issue 99 in November of 1965.
Really? That's interesting.
I didn't know he was that old.
So I wonder if he predated Garfield the cat.
Do we know what? That is something we need to look up.
Well, keep talking about the love, and I'll fact check.
So, some of you guys may know Beast Boy as Changeling back in the 80s and early 90s before he went back to being Beast Boy. He's had several names besides Changeling and Beast Boy, but we all know him as Beast Boy.
I like Beast Boy better.
I like Beast Boy better, too. Changeling is... Isn't there, like, a Spider-Man villain named Changeling or something like that?
Yeah, that sounds right.
It gets all confusing. But
I have the facts.
You have the facts.
The facts are...
Survey says...
Beast Boy predates by 13 years. 1978 is when
Take
Garfield...
Take that, Jim Davis.
How long Garfield... Yeah, Jim Davis. You copycat... I wasn't even trying to make a joke. I got it halfway out and was like, it's going to sound like I'm making a dad joke.
Yeah.
It's all right.
It's okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, cat got my tongue going.
Oh, and it keeps going. And the hits... This is like getting flowers.
I know.
Right? We're just getting a bouquet of jokes here.
We're just getting a bouquet of bad jokes. You could say they litter the ground. Oh, man. I'm done.
So,
sorry.
Let's see. Where are we back to? Oh, we're still doing the Beast Boy and Raven. Raven! Real name is Raven. Her first appearance in the comics is a comic called DC Comic Presents issue 26. That was in October of 1980.
Mm.
So, did not know that.
Mm.
No.
So, that was interesting. The reason why I kind of pick Raven and Beast Boy is they start off as... like as any couple when they meet, like for the first time when they're younger, Raven was annoyed by Beast Boy. That kind of reminds me of How I Met My Wife. So she was kind of annoyed by me when she first met me.
It's good it went that way.
Yeah, so.
That kind of reminds me of every person I've ever met.
Like,
regardless of relationship, I just annoy them at first.
Annoy them at first. And so, you know, Raven is not really in touch with her feelings anyway. So she's always...
It's that half-demon thing.
That half-demon thing. You know, if your dad's, you know, a demon in an underworld, you're kind of not the most happiest person at times. You're kind of... emo, listen to The Cure, and
melancholy.
And some Smashing Pumpkins, you know.
Yeah, with her infinite sadness.
And, you know, Beast Boy is more of a joker and more of a happy, so they're basically kind of opposite. So, yeah, at times they're going to, one's going to be annoyed by the other, but like Steve Urkel did with Laura Winslow on Family Matters, Beast Boy wore her down.
There you go.
So eventually she realized her feelings for Beast Boy, and also realized that she can give in to her feelings of happiness, because that was one of her fears. Was she has always dealt with sadness, and she's always been able kind of to control it, because that's basically been her life. And she was afraid that if she experienced happiness, then she would kind of like lose controls over powers and wouldn't know how to deal with that, being a half demon. So she finally trusted herself to fall in love, and her and Beast Boy are a couple as of right now. So being that they are Teen Titans, and you know, we'll see what happens with love, young love. So
young love. There you go.
That is my number three.
Number three. All right.
All right.
All right.
That was a good pick.
It was a good pick, yeah.
My number three. Hoban and Zoe Washburn. Zoe and Wash from Firefly and Serenity.
Okay. That's
I like them because they don't do what they normally did with every couple that you see, in the fact of you meet them, they're already in love, they're already married, is one, and they're the opposite of the way that normal tropes go. Usually, you see the dude is the badass, the girl is the other, and then Wash is just a goofy pilot.
Who
plays with dinosaur toys. And in one of my favorite scenes where he's like, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. And she is a soldier. And if a fight were to break out, she is the one that you would have to look out for, not him. He's great as a pilot, though. He has his own skill set. So you've got these two individual couples in a relationship, and they kind of make each other better. They kind of complete each other with their skill set, I guess I would say that. There's no drama in their relationship in terms of they get along from the start. They're never not getting along. It's very much a strange juxtaposition between, you know, Mal and what's her face. And
well, I mean, if Zoe was your wife, I would be afraid too, because Zoe's kind of tough. So happy wife, happy life.
There you go.
So
that is the takeaway.
So yeah, that's I mean, that's kind of simple. That's my number three pick. I just like them together, and I love Joss Whedon the way he does things. So
yeah, I like that. That's a good pick.
And if only he could have been more like a leaf on the wind. Too soon.
All right. Well, I guess we'll go to, what are we, number three, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number three of love.
I guess my number three, also a Joss Whedon creation, if you will. But whereas that relationship didn't have any drama, this one is probably filled with some of the weirdest drama a couple could have. And the relationship I'm talking about is Buffy and Angel.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, It's a really, really good. I think everybody probably knows the basic premise of it, but I'll just summarize it here, I guess, real quick. So once, you know, Buffy and Angel had this tension between them, you know, romantically for a while, and then when they finally get to the point to where they
consummate.
There you go. Thank you very well. Once they consummate it, yeah, he becomes evil. And yes. Then tries to kill Buffy.
He loses his soul. So I think we can all agree it just represents the way interest in another causes you to be a soulless monster.
Yes, that's exactly.
No, obviously it's obviously you know how some guys are only out for one thing, and exactly. Once they get that, they yep. turn, and that's kind of the idea behind.
And it's played out real well, but it just doesn't stop in that one season, because that happens during season two, where that whole Angelus character comes out from Angel. But you know, once he gets his soul back, Angel kind of reappears in further seasons, and then he gets his own spinoff show. Right. But you did have
that really tragic moment.
Oh, at the end.
Where he gets his soul back right as she's...
Yes.
Right as she was true. Stabbing him through the stomach and sending him through a portal.
Yeah. But even so, even though they have kind of gone their separate ways from time to time, they always seem to kind of come back together briefly, if you will. And even at the end of, you know, the Buffy series finale, you know, he's kind of there helping her out at the end for a little bit, and then, you know, goes away again to take care of his own big bad that was going on.
Right.
And his...
He was going to be the backup plan in case she failed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's right. But yeah, I think Buffy and Angel pretty much, you know...
I find it interesting, too, because it's not on anyone's list, but I think you could also say Buffy and Spike.
I was going to add, but I didn't want to be greedy.
Yeah.
I didn't want to take too much Buffy. But I would agree with that, too.
Yeah, very different relationships with a different type of soulless vampire.
Exactly. Yeah. He went and got his soul for her.
Yeah. Right.
So, I mean...
But she didn't love him back.
Yeah. So...
Wah, wah, wah. Mm.
I just remember, like, one episode where Angel was, like, human for a day. And they spent, like, basically half the day in their room.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I was a big fan of when, and it wasn't on Buffy, but when Angel was a puppet for a day.
Yeah. That is the best. But I'm a pretty big fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and even Angel and everything. When I watched season two, I watched it kind of after the fact, so I kind of binged it. So I actually didn't even know that Angel kind of went bad. So that was kind of like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. That's so good. But yeah, Joss Whedon does some amazing stuff.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. All right, that's my number three.
That's number three.
All right. Let's get on to it.
Where are we going?
We're going to the Love Deuce.
The Love Deuce.
Heart-shaped deuce.
That's right. Put on that Barry White album. We're about to go downtown.
Whoa.
To the Love Deuce.
Not exactly sure what that means. But it sounds sexy.
I don't know. Get out your glass table. Because we're about to lay it down.
It's going downhill.
Every week.
Right.
Sink to new lows.
Yes.
All right, all you lovers out there. My number two.
Give us a taste.
Is Mr. Luke Cage.
Ooh.
And Jessica Jones.
All right.
Alrighty. So, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones. Give a little insight. Jessica Jones' first appearance is Alias, issue number one. That's from November of 2001. And Mr.
I'm still thinking about the glass table comment. Sorry.
And Luke Cage's first appearance is Luke Cage, Hero for Hire, number one of June of 1972.
Yeah.
All right, we're talking about two street-level fighting superheroes here. And how their love story is kind of like a lot of people's love story. One gets drunk, have crazy sex, and find out that you're pregnant. And that is how Luke Cage and Jessica Jones got together. Because Jessica Jones was a little drunk and feeling a little naughty. And she said, hey there,
Dark Power Chocolate. Man.
Hey there, Power Man. I would like to feel your power.
So she wouldn't have got pregnant. She would have with the Iron Fist.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, like with the Luke Cage, you could have went to, you could have went the bromance route, which would have been Power Man and Iron Fist.
But I went with the more conventional.
Power Man and Iron Fist, now that I think about it, kind of sounds like a stage show.
It does. Or, yeah.
Hindsight.
Yeah.
Why is it always my picks?
I don't know. You're not even talking about Iron Fist at all.
I was going for love and everything. Yeah.
So was I.
But yeah, so that was what ended up happening was, you know, they had a night together and she ended up becoming pregnant. And so, you know, as they're trying to figure out what it is that they want to do and everything, they start to get to know each other more. And, you know, the walls that Jessica Jones has up are starting to come down, you know, because she feels that she can be herself around Luke Cage. Because other than that, she's more of a hard person with walls up and doesn't like to, you know, feel emotions due to her situation when she had to face the Purple Man. And so this was kind of after, you know, dealing with all that. And so Luke Cage was one of the people that helped her take on Purple Man in the comics. And so as they were doing that, they developed a relationship and they fell in love. And, you know, through it all, when the New Avengers were formed, Luke Cage joined the New Avengers and she supported them in that. And then when she got her powers back, she also became an Avenger. And you know, they had their daughter, is Daniela, is the name of their daughter, Daniela Cage. They were married in the New Avengers Annual number 1. That was in June of 2006. So, and then throughout that, Luke Cage is more of the superhero and Jessica is on the reserve. She's basically taking at home with their daughter.
Leave of absence or something.
Yeah, leave of absence. If they need her, then she'll come by. And if they need a babysitter, they just call Squirrel Girl. Because, you know, everyone.
I wish I lived in that world.
I know, right?
And side note, you know, Squirrel Girl actually proved to be a decent babysitter because Norman Osborn had sent some, like, robots to attack the Avengers place, their headquarters at the time. And Squirrel Girl was able to get the baby out of there and, like, defeat a lot of the robots that Norman Osborn sent. So, but I always thought those two were kind of complete each other because they're, you would think Power Man would be more of the hard boiled type, but he's more of the softy, and Jessica's the hard one, you know, Luke Cage is kind of the dreamer at times more than Jessica is, and she's the one that, like, gets them to reality, like, hey, you're being a superhero, you got a family, so you gotta think about that. I'm just letting you know. So that is my number deuce. Our list of love.
Yeah.
Luke Cage and Jessica Jones.
I like Cage. That's a good pick.
Thank
My number, my deuce.
Your deuce.
The deuce of love.
Prepare yourself.
All right. I'm getting ready.
Some of the best romances start with Once Upon a Time in a Faraway Land.
Okay.
This one starts a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Han Solo and Princess Leia.
Oh, that's a good one. That is a good one.
Obviously, 77, 80, 83, 2015, got to see. And then, who knows how many times in various expanded universe titles. But, to be honest, the romance snuck up on me as a child because I was so into Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Partially because I was blonde as a kid, you know, and I always rooted for it was Bo Duke. It was, you know, it was who I identified with the blonde, you know, John from Chips, and et cetera. So Luke Skywalker, I was pulling for Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia.
Yeah, that's...
Until 1983, and then I was really grossed out.
Yeah.
Right!
I think that happened to a lot of us.
But I, in 80, I settled for the fact, you know, with Empire Strikes Back, I settled for the fact that they were going down that route. And that nothing sums up the relationship like the I love you, I know. Not I love you too. Just that scoundrel, that scruffy looking nerf herder.
Exactly.
Worked his way into my heart as well as Princess Leia's.
Right.
Not that I didn't like him before, but that's I don't know what to say about that. It was just
It's I think everyone because I know as a kid too. Like I was like oh it's Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia, they're going to be the romantic, you know. They're going to see it on the posters, you know, Luke's holding lightsaber.
Yeah, the original one, scantily clad, like, hanging onto his leg.
Yeah, like a, you know, Boris Vallejo drawing. Yeah. You know, like, whoa, hello.
And then you would think, like, before Empire Strikes Back, everyone at Halloween was like, hey, I'm Luke Skywalker, this is Princess Leia. Like, our couple, like, it was a couple's costume.
Sure. Yeah. And then just, a few years later, it gets so much more incestuous.
Yeah.
So,
like,
yeah, that's a... And that's why it's number deuce. It's funny that for me, like, what kind of won Han over for me was probably Harrison Ford in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, seeing him in that, I was like, I love Raiders of the Lost Ark so much that I was like, oh, I love Harrison Ford. He's the best. And then I see him in Empire Strikes Back, and he's, you know, he's Han Solo in that, and I just, like, went back and watched all. And
I'm like, yeah, you know, I loved Han Solo from the beginning. As much as you can identify as a three-year-old with the character, you know, Luke Skywalker so much more. So I kind of feel sad that he's off, alone on an island.
Yeah, that is kind of, Well, maybe he's not alone. You know, we don't know. There's,
we don't know.
We don't know yet. It could be other little
younglings. He has one lone Ewok
that
he's kept as a pet all these years.
Just trained in the arts of the Jedi.
Rey gets there with a lightsaber, and he's in the back room going, kill me. Just kill me. I've seen some shit.
But we see what happens to a Skywalker when they fall in love, though.
It's a little bit, you know.
They just kind of go off the deep end.
A little bit, yeah.
They kill younglings.
They do. That was just a little bit, you know. You want them to go bad? Okay. I'm okay with that. He's killing kids. Come on!
I love that little kid's reaction when the lightsaber, like, comes on and he jumps a little.
Yeah.
That was so perfect.
Yeah. Like, and then...
I also loved Ewan McGregor's absolutely terrible delivery of the phrase killing younglings. Because I have seen the holocrons. He was killing younglings. And he sounds like he's going to laugh and he puts his hand up to his fist. It really.
Yeah, it's...
Do you ever see in Return of the Jedi when Han, like, cups Leia's breast?
I don't know.
Rewatch it.
What?
Rewatch it. Really? It's at the bunker scene whenever the shots happen. Whenever the shots are happening from she gets shot or whatever. He's like, he falls forward and just... cops a feel right there.
Oh, I do remember that. Cause they have
you
the
sly fox, Harrison.
Yes. And now we know.
Yeah, we know. There was stuff.
There was
things.
Stuff.
Yes. Romanticness.
What's going on?
What's going on? All right. I guess we'll go to. I don't know. That's. Are you done with the
I have taken my deuce.
You've taken your deuce?
It's sitting there for all to enjoy. All
right.
Take it in.
Take it in. Waft it in.
Swirl around.
All right.
Let it swirl around in your mouth. Wait.
Whoa. What are we talking about here? All right. My number deuce is something a little bit different. So bear with me with this one, because it's going to start out, it's going to sound horrible. Because, and this is from the Sandman comic, made famous by Neil Gaiman.
There we go.
So the relationship that I am talking about is Morpheus and Nada. Nada was an African princess who, early on in the beginning of time, fell in love with Morpheus. And, you know, from it's kind of a little bit of a convoluted story, so I'm going to just kind of summarize it as much as I can. She kind of gets some repercussions because she's not supposed to be involved in a relationship with
one of the Endless.
With one of the Endless. So she goes about and kind of commits suicide, jumps off a cliff. So she dies.
How romantic.
Yeah. I know. Right? So I'm going to try to save it. So Morpheus is angered by her kind of sacrificing herself and kind of condemns her to hell and just so it's romantic. not sounding any
way
better
to
yet.
Save it, Rick.
I know, not getting there yet. Give me time though. So years later, which is quite a bit of time later actually, because progress of time and everything, the dream Morpheus is confronted by his sister Death. And basically kind of explains to him about how much of an a-hole he's kind of been towards Nada about this. So, what will you do to kind of make up for that?
Well,
ice cream could be one thing. That could be a thing. Mm-hmm. That could be a thing. But he goes to hell to bring her back. Oh. So, I mean, you know, granted he sent her to hell.
Yeah.
But he went to hell to get her back. So, and through the process of going to hell to go there, and, you know, he goes through several things to get to her, to release her, and in a deal.
So, this is kind of like if Ike Turner were to drive to the hospital, pick up Tina.
Yeah, actually, yeah, if you put it in, okay, yeah, all right, maybe I'm not saving it then. Okay. but I think she does ultimately forgive him for so there's that. And then I guess throughout that whole process also, Lucifer ultimately gives Morpheus the key to hell.
Yeah.
So it starts as a whole other storyline, but yeah. So that's my number deuce.
That's his deuce.
That's my deuce.
That's
Morpheus
deuce.
And Nada.
I absolutely adore the Sandman comics.
I do too. And again, going back and reading about that, doing the research on it, I'm like, God, I gotta go back and read these stories because they're so good. So,
I love the fact that one of the issues of Sandman won the World Fantasy Award for Best Short Story, and the next day they changed the rules so a comic book could never win again.
Exactly.
It deserved it.
Without a doubt. A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes.
People, that is so good.
Oh, and the way the series ties together with the Tempest at the end. That is everything that comics could be.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and I wish more comics were like that. Just man, because some of the single issue stories that he even put out were just so amazing.
Oh yeah,
so good, ugh. So good.
The one with the werewolf.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah,
that's a good one too. Yeah. Sorry. Oh man.
I've gone down a Sandman rabbit hole.
I want to go back there and just curl up the Sandman rabbit hole.
Your deuce took me places I have not been in a while.
See, this is what this podcast, this episode is all about.
That's right.
All right, I guess that's my number deuce. It's out there.
All right. Number one.
The R. Kelly.
No.
Memorial.
There we go.
Love. There pick it is. Number one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Go ahead.
There we go.
Shower us in your golden choice.
My number one is Eric Draven and Shelley Webster.
Oh, yeah.
Better known as The Crow.
Yes.
So, I picked this one. Little backstory on The Crow, on this couple. This original story of The Crow, issue was Collabor Comics, issue number one, 89. If I wrote that right, yeah. I think it's 89.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing a little backstory on The Crow, I remember reading it and then watching the movie and stuff, but, you know, it was such a long time ago. You know, Eric was a musician and his girlfriend / fiance, they were in love and, you know, they lived together, and what ended up happening, a group of thugs broke into their apartment, and funny thing was, you find out like in later issues in another story that it was actually the wrong apartment. Those thugs were looking for another person, because that person didn't pay their money for the drugs that they had or something like that. So it was a mistaken identity that they killed Eric and Shelley, but you don't find that out until like another story set separate from The Crow. They had another story. But mistaken identity, they kill both Eric and Shelley. And a year later, Eric is resurrected by a mysterious crow. And he sets out for revenge on the people who killed him and his fiance. And it's basically a classic kind of love story of you know, you're losing love and coming back and avenging the person that you love, going through hell and back to be with the one you love in all eternity. So it's very sad. Made a great movie. Brandon Lee portrayed The Crow. It's still a classic. If you have never seen The Crow, you are missing out. Oh, yeah. Great movie, great soundtrack. You may want to skip the other sequels because, I mean, there's one with Edward Furlong from Terminator 2. Yeah. And yeah, you may want to skip that one. Just stick with the original Crow.
Yeah. So. They are talking about a remake. And I would theoretically be okay with it, if so long as they change it enough. The comic is a little different, and I'm a huge fan of both the movie and the comic. But in the comic, there is no reason. Their car breaks down on the side of the road, people come up upon them, and the crow actually visits at that point after they shoot Eric in the head. He's just laying there dying, and the crow says, "Don't look." Yeah. Because you'll always remember this, and he won't close his eyes and just watches Shelley being killed. The horrible thing, the horribleness of it is that, you know, the creator, James Barr, wrote that as basically a love note to his fiance who was killed in a drunk driving accident. And there's just a lot of emotion, a lot of amazing things. So it's nice whenever a work of art comes out of something so sad. And I wholeheartedly love that pick.
Yeah.
It would have been on my list, but I read your list first.
So. Yeah, I'm a big fan of both the movie and the comic also. Yeah, it's a phenomenal pick. So, yes. Yeah. Just the first movie.
Yeah, just the first one.
Yeah, the second one was maybe okay. Nah, it's not really. Yeah. Not even It's all right.
I've never seen any of the other ones.
Yeah. Because it'll only
sully the good name of the crew.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So, but good pick.
Great number one.
Yep.
All right. Allow me to shower you all
with my number one.
What is your golden pick?
My golden pick. I don't even have to say the names of the people involved. I only have to say three words, and you will know immediately who it is I'm talking about.
Ooh.
Okay.
As You Wish.
Oh, my gosh. It's such a good pick. That is such a good pick. Oh, man.
Wesley.
Yeah.
And Buttercup.
Oh.
From The Princess Bride. A movie that I quote possibly more than any other movie in day-to-day basis.
You know what? The comment I'm going to make right now, this makes it going to sound even worse that I didn't even think of this one.
Yep.
My son's name, partially inspired by this movie.
And my son's name, Buttercup. Yes, Buttercup. That's
such a good pick, though.
I have three kids, Buttercup, Humperdinck, and Fezzik.
Oh, it's such a great movie, though.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, I first learned about it from my brother, Inigo Montoya. First time I saw the movie was actually in school. One of my seventh grade teachers, maybe? Wow. Eighth grade? I don't know. Freshman year. At some point, one of my teachers showed it to us over 2 days, and it was just the most charming movie ever. Yeah. And it's almost classic fairy tale. Almost, if you look at it, it almost feels video game-ish in that you have the minor bosses you have to get through.
Yeah, that is true.
He has to prove himself. Well, first off, the backstory. You have the farmhand who serves the girl, only ever says as you wish to everything she asks for, and gradually they fall in love, but he has to go off to fight in a war. What can be more classic romance than that? His ship is attacked by the dread pirate Roberts, who leaves no survivors. So he's left for dead. And then 5 years later, against her will almost, she begrudgingly agrees to marry Prince Humperdinck, played by Chris Sarandon, but who's actually just going to use her to kill her to start a war. Another country. And so he hires three people to kidnap her away, and the dread pirate Roberts comes after her. Who is actually, of course, Wesley. So he has to first prove himself able to fight off someone with swords. And then he has to be able to fight off someone who's a giant.
Yes.
And then he has to have a battle of wits. With a Sicilian.
With a Sicilian!
And you never get into a battle of wits with a Sicilian when death is on the line.
That's right.
Inconceivable.
And that's actually the quote that I use the most is either inconceivable or more to the point. I say all the time, you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
That's such a good
one. Oh, man.
Obviously he has to try to rescue his princess bride. Making friends along the way with the very people he helped defeat, except the Sicilian. just a great classic fairy tale movie. Yeah. A movie so moving that even Fred Savage is willing to hear about the kiss at the end.
That is true. Yes. That is very true.
Have you guys ever read the book?
Oh, I have not.
The book is written from the most interesting standpoint in that it is told from the perspective of... The author is writing it because his father used to tell him the story.
Oh, really?
And the story he realized after he actually went out and bought the original book was terrible. And his father cut out all the boring parts. So there'll be parts where it will say, and this is the part where my father skipped about, 18 pages of the explanation of what her gown looked like, And so it's clever. It's well done. So just a wonderful cast and a wonderful movie.
Yeah, that is
and a wonderful romance at its key.
That is an excellent pick. The first time I ever watched that movie too, oddly enough, I was actually homesick from school.
Oh wow.
Yeah, okay. And it happened to be on TV and I watched it and I was like, oh, this is kind of funny, because so was Fred Savage, and then I was like, and I just became enthralled in that whole movie, and I've loved that movie ever since. Mm-hmm. It was so awesome. Excellent pick. I like it. All right. So my numero uno. My pick is maybe a little non-traditional type of relationship. This relationship involves a plant and a woman.
It's Evil Dead.
It is. Whoa. You know what? It could be, but not that plant. This is more of a reciprocal kind of.
Oh, okay.
Romance.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's Swamp Thing and Abigail Arcane.
Okay.
So I think one of the stories that kind of just really captures this whole thing. And again, this oddly enough, this involves hell.
I'm sensing a theme here.
It seems like it. Yeah, I don't know.
Love is hell.
Love is hell. Maybe that's what we should draw from this.
Oh, you've
that's
met correct. My wife. I hope she doesn't listen.
But the story that I'm going to talk about is actually from Alan Moore's run of Swamp Thing, which is... Those are probably some of my most favorite comic books ever.
Yeah.
They're just so... They're fantastic. And the story involves Swamp Thing Annual Volume 2, Number 2. So, I should have made this my deuce.
Your deuce.
Yeah, that would have went well. But the storyline, basically, it picks up from a comic book from the regular series and goes straight into the annual. What ends up happening in the comic is Anton Arcane, Abigail's crazy, mad scientist, demonic uncle.
We all have one of those.
I know, don't we, though? He ends up dying. He goes to hell and ends up taking Abigail with him. So her animated body is left on the earthly plane, if you will, and alive and well, but her mind and soul is completely gone. Swamp Thing is feeling kind of powerless at this point. He's not really sure exactly what he's going to do. He wants to help Abigail because it's the woman he loves. Mm-hmm. Early on, or right around this time frame, is where Alan Moore kind of introduced some additional powers into the Swamp Thing character, where he can kind of go into a realm called the Green, which is kind of like all of the plant life on Earth, if you will. So he decides to try to leave his body to go into the Green and kind of explore that to see if there's some way that he can find Abigail. Okay. So as he goes through this, he ends up going through the Green and finding another area, which ends up becoming like, it becomes he basically runs into Dead Man.
Okay.
The character Dead Man. So they're kind of like in limbo. So, and he talks to Dead Man for a little while, asking if he's seen Abigail or whatever. And Dead Man basically tells him that, you know, it's been a little while since he's passed, so she's probably not here in limbo anymore. So they try to go to another realm.
They limbo lower now.
Limbo lower. So he actually ends up... How low can we go? He actually goes to... he goes to heaven. He runs into Phantom Stranger and they go to heaven. Like one incarnation of heaven. Like one little area. Like, and basically the heaven that they go to is what Alec Holland, which is what Swamp Thing was in his human form. That was like the heaven that Alec Holland went to, which is basically green pastures and everything. And he's there with his wife that had died at the time too, when he died in his first human form. So,
cabin fire, right?
Exactly. So you know, he talks with himself, explaining like what's going on, and trying to find Abigail. They end up having to go elsewhere. The next place they end up having to go is hell. So the Phantom Stranger is trying to lead them there, and Phantom Stranger says that he can't go any further. He can't go into hell because You know, he's the Phantom Stranger. He's mysterious. Nobody knows what he is or who he
is. I, too, on a journey one time met up with a Phantom Stranger who took me to heaven.
There you go. Whoa, hello. But he couldn't take you to hell. So when they get to hell, though, and they get to the gates of hell, they meet up with Etrigan, demon. So Etrigan basically volunteers to take Swamp Thing into hell to look for Abigail. At one cost. There was a flower that Phantom Stranger pulled from the gardens of heaven. So Etrigan wanted that as a peace offering, if you will. So Phantom Stranger gives that to Etrigan, takes Swamp Thing into hell, and they continue to look. They run into Anton.
And rhymed a lot, didn't they?
They did rhyme a lot, because at that point he had become a rhymer. So that's actually when he first started making a sick mixtape. I'm telling him, spoken word is his thing. So they get to hell, he runs into Anton Arcane, and Anton is basically laughing at Swamp Thing, saying, "You'll never find her. You will never find her. You'll never be able to bring her back." And at the end of their conversation, Anton comments, "How long have I been here? How many years?" And Swamp Thing says, "It's only been a few hours." And then he starts screaming because it feels like he's been there forever. And they continue to look further, and they finally do find Abigail. And he ends up bringing her back and brings her back to her body. And she awakens without any memory of what had transpired or anything. Mm-hmm. But Swamp Thing, being Swamp Thing, he remembers all of it. So the comic ends basically with him kind of curled up in a ball, crying because of everything he went through to bring Abigail back.
Oh, okay.
And that's the end of the comic.
Wow.
Yeah. It's an excellent read. I've summarized it really quickly. But it's so good.
What kind of life are you setting your kid up for naming him Anton Arcane?
Yeah, that's not a, you know.
I wish my last name was Arcane.
Yeah.
That might be my new stage name.
Anton Arcane.
Well,
that's
Christopher Arcane.
Christopher Arcane. If you do that, yeah, I mean, what's the other guy? What's the magic guy? Chris Angel.
Hey, Chris Angel.
Yeah.
See, you can.
Chris Arcane.
Chris Arcane. I like it.
There you go. We got such a bad name.
So there might be a career in,
the occult?
In the occult, or, becoming an entertainer.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Aren't they basically the same thing?
The occult people probably don't do it in front of the stage, I'm thinking. Maybe. Mm-hmm. In their basement alone. So that's my number one.
All right.
Any honorable mentions?
Oh. There are a couple honorable mentions, I believe, right?
Yeah.
We have a
honorable mention, Sam, or you want to go? Okay.
I think I got about one or two honorable mentions.
Let's hear two of them.
All right, my first one is Al Simmons and Wanda.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one,
yeah.
too.
Yes, I love the irony. Find your way out of hell.
Man, there's a lot of hell going on.
Yes.
Man.
Loves. Those of you who don't know who Al Simmons is, you may know him by another name. That is
Russell
Spawn.
Simmons. Oh.
They don't all look alike. Seriously, they don't all look alike.
Oh, man.
Especially not Russell Al Simmons.
Yeah, that's
a disfigured beyond compare.
Yeah.
Well, before he got convinced. All right. As I was saying.
One wishes he looked like Freddy Krueger. That's his figure.
That is true.
As I was saying, Al Simmons is better known as Ted McFarlane's Spawn. So,
there you go, Todd McFarlane. Oh,
that's a Ted.
It's all right.
That's
all
right.
It's okay. Yeah, it's okay.
It's Spawn.
We don't all look alike.
Todd, Ted, whatever.
Oh, God.
A little backstory. Owl, the CIA hitman, basically got killed by his own people because, you know, that's what they do when you're in wet works. You tie up loose ends. And he was...
That's a different comic. Yeah,
did that ever actually come out? That did come out. Yeah, that was like, out. It was really...
Like five Wet Works toys, yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah, they had toys and everything,
because like, that was the one that took a long time to come out.
Yeah,
there was one
that was... Was Portatio?
I don't know. Was that? Yeah, I think so.
Because I remember one of those Image comics.
Yeah.
Took like a long... Like, oh, they kept... Oh, Wet Works.
Wet Works coming out. Yeah.
I think it was Was Portatio. Wildcats was Jim Lee.
Jim Lee.
Yeah.
Keep going with you.
So Spawn. So, you know, Al gets sent to hell, and you know, years later, he comes back as Spawn, and he doesn't realize how long he's been in hell, and so first thing he does, he goes and finds his wife. And finds out that his wife had remarried his best friend, Terry Fitzgerald. And so, you know, Spawn is all distraught and everything, and finds out that he has a daughter. And it's like, oh, I had a daughter? And when he died, she wasn't born yet. So, So, you know, throughout the time, he had to fight monsters and other demons from trying to destroy them, while also trying to get over the fact that he may never get his life with Wanda ever again, and had to basically, if you love something, you have to let it go.
There you go.
So... That is one. And speaking of Let It Go, my other one,
Frozen.
Close. I'll sing this melody for you, and hopefully you'll get it.
Just Let It Go.
No, not Let It Go. What would you do if I sang out of tune?
Is that Wonder Years?
That is Wonder Years.
Winnie Cooper. Kevin Arnold.
Yes. Kevin Arnold. Wonder Years was on television from 1988 to 1993.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
That is a good, yeah. That's That brings back some memories.
It does.
Wonder Years.
You know the weirdest thing? Do you remember? And I don't remember. It was like him sneaking out of, like he was sneaking to see her or something. And they randomly played a Bob Seger song from the 70s. And it really took me out of the moment, even as a teenager. They played We've Got Tonight. They've got We Got Tonight. And it's based
on the 60s, right?
Yeah, the show's based on the 60s. And they played something from the 70s. And it made me...
That's kind of weird.
It was just kind of weird. Yeah. That's such a good show, though.
It is.
I don't know. You know, actually, I haven't watched it since.
It could be awful. Yeah,
and
it could be, too. It could be like watching Gilligan's Island right now. Because Gilligan's Island does not age well.
It does not age well.
No. It's pretty painful.
Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Howe. That's a low.
That's true. There you go.
Who was able to get busy on there, apparently.
There you go.
but you know, Kevin Arnold and Winnie Cooper, that whole your first love, the first person you fell in love with, may not be the person you end up with. So and we all have our some people have
Winnie
their
Coopers.
Winnie Coopers.
Have
I don't have a Winnie Cooper.
You don't have a
Hear that, wife? You are the only one.
Oh, see that?
There's his Winnie Cooper
and Princess Leia, and
there you go.
And Princess Buttercup. And
Sam, did you do something wrong? You're trying to get a lot of points here, I'm thinking.
it's close to, you know.
It is.
You gotta rack up those points.
I hear what you're saying.
So those were my two honorable mentions.
All right, I also have two honorable mentions. First, I don't have a good way of cueing you in on what it's going to be, so I'm just going to say it.
All right.
Colossus and Shadowcat.
Oh.
only because that was when I first got into X-Men comics. It was like, oh, look, there's this couple. And then, I've said before, it was the Mutant Massacre. And immediately, was it the Whirlwind dude? I forget what his name was. That just completely almost killed Shadowcat.
Oh, yeah.
Is that when she becomes Psylocke?
No, Kitty Pryde is Shadowcat.
Kitty Pryde. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
But what is Psylocke? Didn't she had a different name too before?
She was Betsy Radson. She was Captain Britain's sister. Yeah. And then and then they brought in another one. And I don't know. Switch.
So, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Right. But it filled Colossus confused. With so much rage that he grabbed a harpoon and just cranked it. Like, they showed it in shadow. You saw him break his neck.
Oh. Yeah.
And I still remember, make peace with your gods, little man. You're next. And then they ran off. So that's a. That's one.
That's a good pick.
There's a funny. I think it was called issue. Was it Astonishing X-Men, where
when they brought him back?
When they brought him back.
Yeah.
And then they reconnected, and so the next morning they come down for breakfast.
Oh, you mean reconnected?
They reconnected.
Oh, hello.
And Logan is
still to rest. Putin.
Logan's sitting in the
in Putin kitchen. In her shadow.
Oh, goodness.
Logan's sitting in the kitchen, and they both come in. And Logan sniffs, and he's like, "Well, it's about time." It's like, wow!
Wow, his abilities allow him. You know?
What a man. Terrible side effect of having that power. Yeah, yeah. Oh, jeez.
Yep. I do not want to ever know that.
He's like, "Well, it's about time." Oh, I was whoa, how did that just happen?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's
probably Joss Whedon again, right?
He
did the first bunch of Astonishing X-Men, so... And my other pick, just for sheer, the coolest looking couple of any one that was on my list, and not that I can really speak to their relationship too much, but they've always been together, and that would be Destro and the Baroness.
That is a good pick too. I like that.
Again, I can't speak about much about their relationship, just that they looked awesome together.
They did look awesome together. It's like some I don't know. Just leather clad.
He is the first brother.
Yeah, she wore leather too.
His
big red collar.
His big
that
red
goes
collar.
All the way down to his navel.
I was like,
that's right.
I was like, he's like the first brother I know that wore leather like that. I was like,
better than Dr. Mindbender. That's all I gotta say.
Exactly.
The dude. The dude that comes with weird suspenders and a cattle prod.
Exactly.
and a monocle.
This is what I wear when I go into battle.
Repeat it all over again.
Yeah.
Speaking of, odd G.I. Joe characters, we were talking about that earlier. Yeah, that's his outfit is probably the least advantageous outfit to wear.
Yeah. Not much protection.
No.
He's in the lab.
Bending minds. I don't know if that's what he sounds like. But amongst other things.
I don't remember what he sounded like.
Yeah, I don't know what he sounded like either. In my mind, that's what Dr. Mindbender sounds like. I don't know.
They did have some weird characters.
They did. All right, well, I guess I'll talk about some of the runner-ups I had. Some honorable mentions, if you will. And my first honorable mention was... And it was really hard for me to pick between these different ones. It was really hard for... It ended up just being ones that I probably liked more, I guess.
But, some last-minute decisions going on in there.
Exactly. Oh, it was hard. The decisions
I
had to make.
Perhaps you thought about it too long.
That was the...
Too much Dr. Mindbender talk here.
Whoa. Yeah. Suspenders and
baseball.
Monocles.
Think about baseball.
But the couple that I'm talking about is Willow and Tara from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
So, So I think the most memorable moment when they got together was in the episode Hush.
Oh yeah, that's a good episode.
When you finally, they're trying to hide from the gentleman and they clasp their hands together,
using their combined powers to move something to block a door. And it's like, that's when they first kind of like make their little connection. And
They touched, and it was magic.
That's right. And it was magic.
So. And you heard some Tori Amos and Sarah McLachlan playing in the background.
Mm-hmm. You should have. But yeah, that's
but you couldn't. You because those men stole all the sound.
That's right. That's right. Hush. That's a great episode, too.
Yeah, that's my favorite Buffy episode. That is. Standalone Buffy episode, at least.
For sure, for sure. And then another one, this is kind of in maybe more of an obsessive type of relationship. Thanos and Death.
Interesting. So,
nothing really to speak of there. I think if you know Thanos, you probably know his obsession with Death. You know, he's trying to please her and win her love. And I think it's pretty much always been kind of a one-way thing. It's never been reciprocal, for the most part. At least I'm not aware of it being reciprocal. So, I guess that's it. That's all I have to say about that subject.
There. So,
yeah.
All right.
I guess we're done.
All right. This one was for the ladies.
This is for the ladies. All right.
So, just remember, when you're ready for... when that special time comes, just put on this podcast.
Yeah. There you go.
Get you in the mood.
Oh, yeah.
All right. All right. Well, thanks for listening. And you can check us out at allofmyissues.com. On Twitter at allofmyissues.
Yep. Our Facebook.
And
Gmail. Email us any ideas you might have, something you want to hear. A list.
Yeah, comments about what you think about what we've done so far, I guess.
Yeah.
Things you'd like to see, that's all of my issues at gmail.com.
There you go. All right. Thanks for listening.
Later.
See ya.
Bye.